Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies, we'll reach in there, we'll pull the baby out, clip the cord, but not in a creepy way.
Oh no. That's creepy just hearing it.
Awkward.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2011 smash hit, Take Shelter.
Smash hit? You might be overstating it a little bit.
Maybe. Although it's got great reviews. I have yet to meet anybody else who has seen this movie, though.
Likewise. Yeah, this is a movie that was a request from my wife to do on the podcast. Not sure where she encountered or saw preview for it, but it was I think a couple of years ago, when we actually used to watch movies together. It was in a preview for another movie we watched, and she really likes Jessica Chastain, especially after Zero Dark Thirty. So she really wanted to watch it. And so she thought we should do it for the podcast.
Well, okay, two things. First of all, we could have just watched Mama if we wanted to see Jessica Chastain.
I've seen Mama and I wasn't impressed.
Yeah, well, secondly, I didn't know that you had not seen this movie. I was sure, as I'm watching this movie, I was sure that there was some profound reason why you had picked this movie. And you were all queued up to talk about it, so I endured this movie over the period of about a day and a half.
And I had actually seen probably the first hour of it before.
Oh, okay. Yeah, your wife gave me the idea that the first time you saw it was the two of you when you went camping.
Yeah, the first time I'd seen the whole thing.
Yeah, first of all, the fact that you would watch this movie while camping in the middle of nowhere is a little troubling.
You're telling me.
Yeah. Well, also, let me set this up a little bit. I was having probably the worst week of feeling like a bad parent. We're going through kind of a contentious time with the 4-year-old. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's all just fine. It's great. It's, you know, we have it. We are blessed compared to lots of other people with their problems.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was frustrating and we were tired, both of us. And we just, my wife and I no longer have any days off together. So that makes things a little more frustrating. And then I get saddled watching this movie.
This movie makes you feel, it's designed to make you feel anxious about the overall well-being of your family unit.
And your own mental health.
Right.
And let me point out, even before we start, this is a well-acted movie. It's a small movie, but it is so well-acted. And I would say that it's well-directed, except that this is the first movie, well, the movie in most recent memory, where it was all tension and no release.
There were a couple releases.
Well, you will have to describe them for me, because let me tell you, part of the reason I like watching horror movies is because there's tension, 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 release. That's what jump scares are about, you know? That's what boobs were about in the slasher movies. Because if it's just tension, if you're just ratcheting up the tension, then you'll get to where I was last week, where I would have wished to watch The Road again before this movie. I would watch The Road and a double feature with Dear Zachary.
I'm not familiar with Dear Zachary, but did I ever tell you of my experience with The Road?
Do tell.
So this was many years ago. I think before the movie. For some reason, one of my coworkers had said, actually, there's a really random connection to you. So I had a coworker who turns out I had relatively similar taste in at least certain genre books and movies. And it was the summer after the Christmas that you had given me World War Z on CD. That's how many years ago it was. And I had mentioned to her over that summer, because we were working together in Kodiak, that she would probably dig this book that at the time nobody had ever heard of, called World War Z. And she never heard of it. She looked into it. She got it. She loved it. She started telling everybody about it and taking credit for finding it, which offended me on one level that I didn't get the credit, but on another level, I didn't find it. You found it, so I couldn't get too upset about it. But anyway, so as a response to that, she said, "Hey, there's this other book you might want to check out. I think you'd like it, called The Road." And it turns out it's by Cormac McCarthy, who I had never read any of his books. It seemed like a hole that I should fill. So I got the book and I started reading it right around the time my wife went to work in Japan for like 6 weeks. So not only did she leave and go to Japan for 6 weeks, but also we had a volcanic eruption pretty near. I don't know if you remember, this a few years ago, the last time we had a really heavy ash fall.
Oh, yeah.
So I was, and the only time I could talk to her was, like at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, just due to the time difference and when she was working over there. So I was all bleary, sleep deprived. This is before we had kids, so I wasn't used to being sleep deprived. So, I was in a weird mental state to begin with, because, you know, I was lonely, I was sleep deprived. And then I ended up reading The Road during this time, too, and then having to think about The Road that I was reading as I took the dog out for a walk in this, like, barren, ashy-covered neighborhood. And it was a really, overall, an unpleasant time to be reading that book.
Well, and I have never read it. I have it on audio, but I haven't actually read it. And I understand that it doesn't have, like, any chapter markings or...
Yeah, it was a really unique style. Yeah, the organization was odd, for sure. It's this weird, almost sort of stream of consciousness narrative with no character names. It's just the boy and the man.
Someday we'll have to talk about No Country for Old Men.
I haven't read that either.
Have you seen the movie?
I have.
Yeah. Well, someday we'll have to talk about it.
Yeah.
I read the book, or I listened to the book, and I watched the movie, and I definitely have thoughts, but I'm going to have to, I mean, it's not something I want to discuss now because I want to think a little bit more about it. And maybe someday, I was telling Jason, maybe someday I'll revisit The Road. He actually really liked both the book and the movie.
I did too. Yeah.
I found the book I never finished because I found it sort of oppressive. And it's not uncommon for me to start a book and not finish it on Audible these days, because I kind of have a buying problem. I buy way too many books. So when I was younger and read voraciously, I would never think of stopping halfway through a book. I would always have to finish the book. On Audible, right, Not so much. And I have plenty of other things to read. But then the movie, I don't think I finished the movie either because I found it oppressive.
Yeah, I thought both were well done and effective stories. But yeah, neither one is pleasant.
Yeah, well, let me tell you. Take Shelter, 2011. Yeah, well done. Effective storytelling. Not pleasant. Not pleasant in the least. I found it extremely unpleasant.
It was tense.
Oh, sure. My God.
I actually really, really liked it. It's one of those movies that, yeah, you know, when you're watching it and like you, I'm going to go back and finish my thought in a second. Like you, we ended up watching it in two sessions. Because we, were watching it around the sleep patterns of our girls in a very cramped space. So, but yeah, I can't imagine just sitting through the whole thing at once. Because it was difficult to take. But, yeah, it was tense, but I thought it was really well done. And it's the kind of movie that, sits with you, makes you think about it afterwards. And the more I think about it, I think the more I like it. And maybe that's just a result of the fact that it was rather unpleasant to watch because it was so tense and anxiety-inducing. Because it did bring up a lot of issues for me, too.
Oh, yeah. And it's, well, I'm reminded, I'm sure I've said this before, but our Uncle John... during the period of time where I had just discovered Steve Buscemi and had seen movies like Trees Lounge, I remember I ran into him and I thought, hey, you know, you should see this movie. It's really great. And his response was, you know, I'm at the time of my life when I don't want to watch a movie about middle-aged people making mistakes. And he probably said it a little more eloquently, but it was like, I have no interest in watching that kind of movie. Like people making poor decisions and remaining losers at the end of the movie is not what I want to do to escape. And at the time, I was like, oh well, point taken. Now I think I understand that a lot better. I mean, I guess it depends on how you view movie watching, because I don't mind watching a movie that's a little. Thought-provoking, and even slightly depressing. But I have an issue with this movie. And again, I don't think it's a bad movie at all. And for people listening, I say go watch the movie, but just realize that that the tension you're feeling, you're not going to get an adequate release of tension. Maybe ever. I don't think I'll ever be not tense again.
That's funny. I thought there were, I can think of at least three releases of tension.
Well, okay, I can think of one that you might consider a release of tension, but I think being physically shocked is a little different than release of tension. Anyway, we'll talk about it. Let's, you want to go talk about the plot? Because the plot isn't actually all that sophisticated or complicated.
Not at all.
No. In fact, as I was watching this movie, I thought, well, I know why Drew likes this movie. It's because Michael Shannon, and to a slightly lesser extent, Jessica Chastain, but Michael Shannon in particular, who gets most of the screen time, there really are very few characters in this little drama. Michael Shannon doesn't have a lot of things to say. Most of his acting is all body movements and face movements and eye movements. Like, he conveys his inner turmoil really well physically without having to discuss it.
Yeah, he was great. I've seen him in a few other things, and he's always really good, but in this movie, he was fantastic. I didn't take the time to go back and look at, Oscar nominations for that year, but I can't imagine a better performance in a movie than he gave.
Well, it is better than his performance in Groundhog Day.
I don't remember him in Groundhog Day.
He and his girlfriend were getting married, and Bill Murray actually at the end gives them a wedding present.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it when we talk about Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day, by the way, I had never seen until last week, and it turns out it's the funniest horror movie I've ever seen.
Horror movie, huh?
Oh, it's a horror movie, yeah. But we're not talking about that horror movie. We're talking about this horror movie. Because this, make no mistake, this is a horror movie that we're watching in Take Shelter.
Yeah, it's weird because it's not. There are a couple like outright horror movie type scares, but mostly, it's sort of the experience of watching it is the horror movie part of it.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. No, you're the victim in the horror movie as the viewer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, okay. So this whole drama takes place in LaGrange, Ohio, where we have Curtis LaForche, I forget how it's pronounced. Turns out I don't pronounce things correctly most of the time, although I think I got through the whole Dr. Strangelove without saying nuclear.
Good job. Good job by you.
It was a struggle. Anyway, so Curtis, Michael Shannon, is married to Samantha, Jessica Chastain, and they have a daughter, Hannah, who is deaf. And the actress, it turns out, is deaf as well. She's a little girl. And the movie opens with Curtis rain starts to fall and a storm is brewing. And the rain is like yellow and thick, much like motor oil. And you think to yourself, what the deuce is happening here? Because it's a very Midwest rural kind of community. You know, they have their own place that's kind of, there's room between houses and things, so. And there are people coming over, but it's just the three of them as far as the family. And they have a sort of a very modest lifestyle. He is, a foreman in a construction outfit, or a drilling outfit, I guess.
Yeah, I can never figure out what they're actually drilling.
Yeah, I don't know either. I figured I didn't have the expertise to even worry about too much about that. And his wife seems to be a stay-at-home mom who also goes to like the swap meet on the weekends to sell her hand-sewn things. I think she does sewing on the side as well, seamstress sort of stuff.
Right, a little side business to squirrel away some money for their annual vacation.
Yes, to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, they live very modestly. They don't have a lot of money. And Curtis is having what turns out to be these dreams of this coming storm. And they are like nightmares that he'll wake up from in a cold sweat. And so it's a little disturbing to him. Well, then he starts to have...
Yeah, and it's not obvious to you as the viewer, maybe for the first couple times, that they're dreams until he wakes up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because it's all very mellow. I mean, you know, he's dreaming of a storm that's coming. And, you know, it starts out with just the storm, and then I believe the second time it's, again... The storm is coming and his family's outside their little house and their dog starts to get really agitated and is going to attack them.
And does attack him.
Oh yeah. It bites his arm. Mm-hmm. So he responds to this dream by building a little fenced off area for the dog. Cause now he's worried that what he is seeing is like a premonition.
Right. He has physical reactions to the dreams. So in his dream, his dog attacks him and bites his arm. And then, for the entire day, the next day, his arm hurts. Curtis is definitely concerned that it's more than a dream.
Yes. So, obviously, he's worried about these things coming. However, there's also a little wrinkle. His mother, played by Kathy Baker, suffers from paranoid schizophrenia. And her illness manifested itself about the same time, or when she was about the same age as he is now. So, right. On one hand,
she's been in a facility since he was 10. He's been living with that his whole life.
Yeah, exactly. And he's having these dreams that are maybe visions of the future, but he's also well aware that this could be early onset of a severe mental illness. And, I mean, goes as far as going to the library and checking out books about mental illness. So, you know, Curtis is, he may be a very quiet man. And, you know, again, he's works in drilling or construction type things. So he has those kind of skills, but he doesn't come off as particularly well-read. However, he's certainly not a dummy because, like I said, he's researching these things. And when he does talk about them, he's pretty matter-of-fact about the whole thing. He's got that whole Midwest thing going on.
Right. He has a he's very economic with his words. So when he does speak, it's very thoughtful. And he doesn't waste a lot of breath.
And he seems very stoic. So mm-hmm. whatever is coming, he's going to take care of it to the best of his ability. But he's not going to be outwardly excited about it. At least he's trying not to be. Although that's where part of the tension is. You can see he's starting to, it's as these things start to come with more regularity or frequency rather, he's getting more and more concerned. And he, in order to prepare for this coming storm, he's now sort of fixated on building out a bigger storm shelter. He's got a small little storm shelter underground in his property, and he wants to make it much more, much bigger and more elaborate.
Right. He wants to be able to stay down there with his family for at least days, if not weeks. He's that worried about the storm.
Exactly. And he wants to be able to weather not just a weather type storm, but also there is a news report of a train derailment with some sort of chlorine leak or something. And he wants to be able to weather that kind of emergency as well.
Right. And in his dreams, the muddy, oily rain is actually making people crazy, like aggressive. The most frightening of his dreams are focused around people threatening his daughter, either taking her from him after he crashes his car or trying to get into their house while he's in there with her.
Yeah, and the beginning is this could be sort of a horror movie. You know, this could be The Strangers or Ill or one of those movies where you have an unknown other outside threatening a family that's basically, you know, it's like a siege movie kind of thing.
Yeah, there was that remake of a George Romero movie a couple of years ago.
Crazies.
This movie easily could have gone in that direction.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And again, Ill, I think, is a French horror film that was remade into The Strangers with Liv Tyler, I think, was the female in it. But it also has the same kind of feel to it. And easily could have gone that way. This could have been a horror movie. The beginning of this could have all led to that kind of thing. Which, by the way, would have provided some release and tension if you had an actual boogeyman crashing into the house and, you know.
Well, for a good part of the movie, you're uncertain if Curtis is the boogeyman.
Oh, exactly. And that's what makes this whole thing. I think for the entire movie, I was concerned that Curtis was the boogeyman. Oh, we'll get there. But, I mean, I thought this was going to go dark every single minute of the movie. Because what Curtis does to prepare for the coming storm is making a series of poor choices unless the storm is actually coming. He is getting, you know, a second mortgage on his house or a home improvement loan or something, in order to basically buy like a Connex trailer and bury it on his property. And he is also his work is increasingly erratic anyway, because he's having like auditory hallucinations of thunder and things like that, which are very powerful as far as in the movie. But because of these things, he's getting more erratic at work and starting to do things like, borrow equipment and that kind of thing in order to get the storm shelter done.
Yes, contrary to company policy.
Yeah, under any company that you would ever work for.
Mm-hmm.
And also, just to add a little tension, Hannah, the beautiful little deaf daughter, because the company that Curtis works for has actually really good insurance, surprisingly good insurance, it turns out, she's going to get a cochlear implant surgery in about 6 weeks. It's going to be, you know, they're talking about discontinuing her sign language classes because she may not actually even need them anymore after the surgery. But Curtis's behavior at work, and again, increasingly bad choices, you know this is not going to end well. Because if the storm is actually coming, that's a scary thing. But if it's not, and Curtis is just like putting his family in at least financial jeopardy and threatening his job, which has the insurance that will pay for this expensive surgery.
Right. And so to the people in his life, it looks like a series of increasingly poor decisions. But from Curtis's perspective, he has no choice.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, he's doing this to prepare his family for the coming storm, which, right, by the way, is a noble thing to do.
Right.
So,
but from the perspective of the viewer, when you don't know if it's true or he's crazy, it is so uncomfortable to watch. There's nothing really surprising about what happens when he faces the consequences of his decisions, which makes everything he does just increasingly more and more anxious when you're watching it.
Oh, exactly. As he's making these decisions, you know they are not going to end well. If God forbid I was forced to watch this in the theater, and also if I was somebody who talked to the screen, I would be yelling at the screen for him to stop making these decisions. And yet, you know, it's playing with the idea of even if you think that he is mentally ill, everything that's happening is real to him.
Right. He sees birds acting in a really bizarre manner, flying in very unusual patterns above him. He's hearing the thunderstorms. He's having the visions. And he does research mental illness, and he even starts to see a counselor about it, and he goes through the checklist himself and determines that he only has, you know, depending on which test he's giving himself, he only has, you know, 2 out of 12 symptoms of schizophrenia, or 5 out of 8, or whatever it is. So he understands that he doesn't meet the threshold for mental illness, which troubles him even more.
Oh yeah. And that's also a thing that makes this movie more powerful. If this were a horror movie and he was just a one-dimensional character, he wouldn't have gone to the doctor on his own. I mean, he's a Midwestern guy who, in every other way in this movie, is the typical sort of greatest generation values kind of Midwestern stoic guy who wouldn't go to the doctor anyway. He would just, you know, go to work and come home and maybe drink himself to sleep and then do it all again the next day. You know, like good Americans should.
Right.
But he's actually interested in, again, if this is mental illness, he's ready to handle that part of it too. Although he's not going to tell many people about this. It's certainly not his wife.
Oh, right. And that stems mostly from his stoicism of not wanting to burden his family with the worry that he's carrying.
Well, and in one of the more powerful scenes of the movie, he awakes from one of these nightmares and has wet himself. And I don't know about you, but this was so tense. I mean, the idea that he is so embarrassed about this and is hiding it from his wife and just, that was like another ratchet up of the tension.
Yeah, I got to actually watch that scene with my wife and have her look at me like in a very caring manner and say, I hope you would just tell me that you wet the bed. That's not helpful. That's not helping me right now. Thank you, though.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No, the answer is no. No. No, you wouldn't. Especially if you're already not telling your wife about the home improvement loan and building shit in your backyard.
And the end of the world.
And the end of the world, yes. And the fact that not only is it the dog that you're seeing in dreams of harming you and your family, but and the outsiders, but also in one dream, your wife herself.
Right. And yeah, that happened. And then he had a dream about her. And then he reacted to her the next morning when she tried to touch his hand. Didn't react very well. And then that night, he had another dream about his best friend attacking him. And that dream was so severe that he had a seizure that woke up his wife. And she ended up calling an ambulance out to come check him out, which led to sort of put all your cards on the table conversation with her, because she is about fed up. And she also has a certain level of stoicism to her, because she's been watching his behavior change and watching him carry some sort of burden that she knows he doesn't want to talk about. So I thought she, Jessica Chastain, also did a really great job. I thought they portrayed their marriage in a really realistic manner. I mean, both husband and wife, had many, many dimensions to them and reacted like real people. You know, like real husband and wives, where you have a lot of nonverbal communication, where you're sort of observing each other and understanding that there's something happening, even if you know, one of you are going to talk about it.
Oh, and she, I like the fact that when she goes to her swap meet or whatever, there's that little scene with the lady who tries to haggle her down. And the fact that, she at first isn't going to haggle. And then it becomes clear that, she does have to sell this stuff, because that is why, that's what this whole thing is about. So right. She sort of has to demean herself a little bit in front of this lady. And then when it becomes clear to other people that Curtis is having issues, she defends him the entire time. I mean, I thought that was a good portrayal too of, she is very supportive of her husband, but not blindly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is a feel-good family movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so you have, the family drama pretty much gets everything comes on the table after, by the way, he had, part of his seizure had to do with he took too many of his sedatives. So it was either a drug reaction or a combination of his visions or nightmares or whatever they are. Because again, we don't know.
Right. And yeah, there's some tipping point in the movie where you realize the actual best possible outcome for Curtis is for this apocalyptic storm.
Oh, exactly.
That's, if it doesn't happen, that's when his life is really going to go in the shitter.
Oh, yeah. No, he is either a horribly troubled human being who is bankrupting his family and will ultimately divide his family in one way or another, or the end of the world is coming. So again, it's going to be a happy ending to the movie no matter what happens. And again, I cursed you.
As it turns out.
So at this point, he, of course, loses his job, which means that, as I told your wife, no matter what, the little girl is not going to get her surgery. Whether it's the end of the world or just dad lost his job, yeah, she's not going to get her surgery. She's going to be signing for the rest of her life, however long or short that may be.
Very true.
When all the cards are laid on the table after the seizure, she is going to support him. You know, she knows that he might actually be batshit crazy and that he's lost his job, and that's horrible, but she's going to take their vacation money and see what they can do about extending the insurance coverage that they have for at least, you know, a little bit, enough at least to get the surgery done. And then they'll do what they need to do, but they're going to do it as a family, and they'll get through this all because that's what their relationship is built on, which, again, is all very admirable.
Right, yeah. After she cools down, she comes back and gives him the "we're going to figure shit out" speech.
Yeah, which is good, you know? I mean, I guess the other choice would be to take the girl and run. Although, you didn't really see that being much of an option.
No, neither one of them seemed very close to any sort of family.
Exactly. Curtis, though, I mean, even though he's now, you know, again, his cards are on the table, he is still making plans and buying things like gas masks that are very expensive. And he is also planning a way that they can, even if the coming storm, even though the storm isn't coming, how they can still, you know, get on with their lives. So,
It's probably getting on with their lives. His wife wants to do at least one thing that's to make her feel normal. She forces him to go to this, Lions Club community dinner that he does not want to go to because he's, lost his job and his former best friend is, essentially telling everybody that he's crazy.
And because he's lost his job and his former best friend has also lost a couple weeks without pay as well.
Right.
So, and by the way, he actually got his former friend, best friend reassigned even before it happened. So actually his friend dimed him out, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so,
yeah, so he had the dream where, his friend Dewart attacked him. And after that, you know, just like the dog, he couldn't abide being around him because he was worried that his dream was going to come real. So he asked their boss to reassign Dewart. And, Dewart reacted to that, by telling the boss that he wants him reassigned because, Dewart knows that he borrowed the equipment. So that gets Dewart, docked a couple weeks of pay and it gets Curtis fired and their friendship is no longer.
And yet, they're still going to see each other at the Lions Club.
Which was the most terrifying piece of, you know, I won't say piece of acting, the most terrifying performance in the entire movie.
Oh, extremely well done.
Curtis finally loses his shit.
And kind of, I mean, did you think it was a little out of nowhere? I mean, not the fight, because what happens is Dewart and Curtis, you know, basically, meet over their potluck, fish lunches or whatever.
It was shocking, but I didn't think it was out of nowhere. I mean, he was cracking. He had been shouldering the burden of this tremendous anxiety and worry, for so long. and he had everything. You know, everything's been going wrong. He's out of a job. His daughter is likely not going to be able to hear because of it. The world's going to end, and people just think he's crazy. Michael Shannon did a really good job of acting like someone who was under such a heavy burden, and he was starting to crack.
Oh yeah, and he unloads.
I said yeah! God damn it! You think I'm crazy? Huh? Is that what he told you? Well, listen up! There is a storm coming! Like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
Yeah, so the fight pushes him over the edge. And gives you, as the audience, your first release of tension.
I was going to ask if that you were talking about this being your first. Yes, this is your first release of tension because you're like, oh my God. And by the way, and I know you guys know this as well, but did you think the extras did a lot of great method acting during this outburst and screaming match?
Yes. Yes, I did. They looked terrified.
And why did they look terrified?
Because Michael Shannon's crazy face is terrifying.
Well, but why else?
Yeah, because they didn't know what was happening.
Yeah.
All they knew was that they're going to be in a movie and they were going to get a free meal out of it.
And so all of a sudden, they are on set, which is basically just a room where they're sitting at a lot of like cafeteria type tables with not a lot of room to back up or anything. And all of a sudden there is a fight and a lunatic telling them that, that none of them are prepared for this coming storm.
There's a storm coming. Yeah. Yes.
Oh yeah. No, it is a powerful piece of acting.
Yeah. And I texted you and asked you if you've seen The Man of Steel, and your answer is no. But if you thought Michael Shannon did a good job in this movie, it's probably worth checking out.
Oh yeah, no, I'll eventually check it out. I think
his General Zod is the best part of that movie. I mean, it's definitely more campy, way more campy, but it is intense. He is an intense Zod.
I was looking through his filmography, and I saw a lot of movies that I recognized the names of, but had not seen. I mean, including Groundhog Day. So, he's definitely someone that I'm going to go back and look out for, because he is a powerful actor. And yeah, Jessica Chastain did a great job too. Much better at this than in Mama, but she did a reasonable job. Yeoman-like work in Mama. Okay, so this is the point where, you know, you think, oh yeah, the men with the butterfly nets are going to come and take Curtis away. But no.
Oh yeah, speaking of Jessica Chastain, that the end of that scene where he just unleashes his crazy on everyone in their community, how did you interpret the way she was looking at him?
Well, I mean, it was like a little bit scared, a little bit embarrassed, a little bit like frightened for your future of your family, but also fiercely protective of him.
And really like deeply sad, right? Like she was really sad about how much pain he was in.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And this little family outing did not go as planned. Yeah. She wanted to inject a little normalcy in her life. Yeah, this turned out not to be that.
Indeed.
Yeah, because now she is, you know, she has alienated all of her friends too.
Yeah, but just that look on her face was just a tremendous performance.
Yeah, I agree. And then comes the storm sirens.
It made me think of like an air raid siren.
Yeah. So
you were not enjoying experiencing this movie. Were you happy when the storm finally came? Like, were you relieved that?
No, I was not happy. Do you know why I was not happy? I will tell you why I was not happy. So, yeah, okay. So the storm comes, right? They actually are awakened, and at first you're not sure whether it's for real or not. But no, these are for real tornado warnings. So they have to go actually take shelter. And so they go to this their shelter. And, you know, he has a gas mask for both himself and his wife. And he's got this oxygen tank thing with a mask for his daughter because you can't use a traditional gas mask for kids. He's all researched his stuff.
Except he doesn't know how to put on his, it's not a gas mask. It's an air purifying respirator.
Okay, well, anyway.
Neither he nor his wife know how to put them on.
Yeah, well,
my wife and I have had to wear them for work occasionally, and they're more complicated than that.
So he would have died if whatever gas was coming?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I think the hospital oxygen mask would have done way more effective for them.
Well, anyway, so we have this actual storm, okay? And at this point, I was expecting Curtis to either kill his wife to protect his little girl, kill his little girl to prevent her from having to go through the hell of whatever was waiting for them after the storm was done, or kill all three of them.
Oh, man, you were in a dark place.
I was in a dark place. I thought, oh, this is going to end with him killing his whole family, especially the girl. I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, because, like, when they wake up and, like, he turns off her, I was sure that he was just going to turn off her gas or her mask or whatever, or turn it up or whatever he'd have to do.
I did have a fleeting thought, wondering if it really was oxygen or something else.
Yeah, yeah. Because it would have been so easy for this to go to sleep, you know? Luckily, this was not that movie.
Yeah.
Because you would have got a phone call had it's been that kind of movie.
Watching this movie in the woods on a very rainy night, it was, trapped in a tiny RV. It was not pleasant to experience.
Oh, it was perfect, actually, for you. You were in the shelter. You actually were in a smaller version of the shelter because his shelter was actually pretty big compared to what you were living in.
Yeah, that was another thought. His shelter was awesome.
Oh, yeah. No, he didn't do a bad job. I thought here, a question for you. Didn't, like, the little vents he had with the little circulating fan things at the top, the little mushroom-shaped things?
The whirly birds.
Yeah. Shouldn't they have been much higher off the ground? Wouldn't you think you'd want a little more distance from the ground than what they were?
I don't think it mattered as far as airflow, which is what they were... what he was going for.
Well, I was just thinking about what if we had, if there were like lots of debris or water or a plague of frogs or whatever, that you wouldn't want to have them literally inches up off the ground. You'd want to have them, I don't know, a couple feet off the ground.
More surface area to get damaged.
I suppose, but I'm thinking, you know, it's like, it's just a pipe down into your shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you've got a pipe sticking up and you have really high winds, I suspect they could get damaged more easily.
Huh. Well, I suppose you're right.
That is like really thin sheet metal. I don't think it was anything more substantial than that.
Oh, no. I think you're right. It's just ducting, right? So it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose you're right. I suppose if it was a tornado, you'd want it as low to the ground as you could. I don't know. I just thought it seems really close.
I'm no doomsdayer. I don't know. I'm just speculating.
Well, yeah. And he had a working toilet down there. That's awesome.
He had lights.
Well, yeah. anyway. Okay, so...
And a whole library's worth of books about mental illness.
Yeah.
They were They were set.
So yeah, exactly. They were good. Okay, so.
Oh, that was a fun little nugget that his wife dropped, by the way. That's where he had been reading all his books. He had been going to the. They didn't show this in the movie, but he'd been going to the storm shelter, like in the middle of the night, and reading books about mental illness.
Yeah, which is. I can see it.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have a garage like our dad had. Anyway, so the end of the storm comes, and, well, at least his wife is telling him the storm is over. He, though, is still hearing the storm raging. And yes. So there's this very tense moment where, because he has locked them in with the padlock. And why do they call it a padlock, by the way? I don't understand that. There's no pad involved. Anyway. Yeah, so he's locked them in and, like, kept the key. So they need him to get out of this shelter. So he doesn't want to let them out. And he had another opportunity to kill his whole family, I thought. But again, this is not that movie. So it's in the Wikipedia plot. It says, after a tense standoff, Curtis throws open the doors into the blinding sun. A minor storm has passed, and neighbors are cleaning up broken tree limbs and debris.
That's a shitty description of what happened.
Yeah, because after a tense standoff, this is a tense movie leading up to a very tense standoff, where she is pleading for him not to let them out because she is scared of him, but to have him make the decision to open the door because he has to do it for himself because she is scared for him.
Right. That was the point. It wasn't a standoff. She was trying to save him.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
And she flat out told him that if she opens the door, then he'll never come back. But if he opens the door, then he is making the decision that he wants to stay with them. So she forces him to do it. She won't open the door for him.
And you get to watch him internally make that decision to make what is a very hard exit out of that storm shelter.
So were you expecting there to have been an apocalypse?
I thought it was possible. I wasn't sure. I was kind of thinking, since he didn't kill his whole family, it may have not gone that route. And they did a very good job of when they came out of the shelter, it was all bright. And then there was like people in helmets walking off in the distance. So you didn't quite, I mean, it could have been part of the mist, but turns out they were just like electrical crews working, so.
You must have been really ticked off about the ending of the mist.
Oh, I thought the ending of the mist was awesome. I mean, I thought it was like really wrenching, but it wasn't like an hour and a half of wrenching to have a wrenching ending. It was like an hour and a half of fun, little, you know, the movie that I had known, because the story that I had read that didn't really have an ending. Yeah, I think The Mist is one of the best endings ever. Cruel, but really good.
It was a gut punch.
Oh, totally a gut punch. That's when I think it was Jason that told me that Frank Darabont hates audiences. Or was that you that told me that?
No, that was me.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's what Jason's summation was. Frank Darabont hates audiences. I thought, well, I could see that from this movie. Although, anyway, The Mist, not as good a movie as this. But a whole different thing going on there, too. That The Mist was an actual horror movie. Like, legitimate from the get-go horror movie. This, you still, at this point, you still don't know what's going on.
No, because they get out of the shelter and they see that everything's essentially okay. There had been a bad storm, and their cleanup crews repairing power lines, and neighbors picking up debris from their yards. But not the end of the world. No crazy oil rain people trying to kill his family.
So then, the next scene, I believe, is Curtis and his wife at an actual psychiatrist's office, and explaining to him that that he needs some pretty serious therapy. Like, not just medication, but like inpatient therapy.
Yeah, he's got to go away for a while.
However, they have this planned beach vacation. And so the therapist suggests that, or the psychiatrist suggests that, yeah, go ahead and do that. That would be fine as a family. You know, go and enjoy that and then expect to do a lot of work when you get back.
Yeah, in fact, a good getting away from the shelter is a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Separating yourself from your obsession. Yeah. So they go to Myrtle Beach and everybody's playing on the beach. It's all a nice family scene.
Building an awesome sandcastle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, through this whole thing, by the way, you know, Curtis may be batshit crazy, but he's always been a good husband and a good dad. Actually, probably a better dad than a husband, but.
Right.
Yeah. He cares about his little daughter, you know, even though he knows that he's, you know, he has now jeopardized her surgery. You know, he is a loving dad. Obviously, you know, they're all a very loving family, tight-knit group. It's all very nice. They're on a beach together. And then the little girl ruins it all by signing the word storm. And as everybody turns around, and I guess Samantha comes out of the house, and the rain starts to fall, and it's that yellow motor oil rain, and they look out, and across the ocean, they see gigantic storm clouds and like two funnels or waterspouts or cyclones or whatever they're called. And then I guess the tide is pulling back because a tsunami is approaching.
Yes.
And that's where the movie ends.
Not quite. He looks at his wife like, without saying it, but with a look that says, am I the only one seeing this? And she just looks at him and says, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She and the girl are definitely seeing this.
Yeah. And what does that mean?
What does it mean? I have no idea. Because is it the real apocalyptic storm? I mean, is he just the unreliable narrator where now he's having a vision of his wife and his daughter seeing the same thing he is?
Yeah, was that in itself the last scene? Was it a dream?
Exactly. I don't know. And much like The Mist, though, they have made the one decision in the entire movie that actually puts them all at risk. Because they are far, far away from any shelter.
Right. I didn't know if that was a, okay, you're not crazy. Okay, it's not going to be that bad. Okay, this is it.
Yeah, I think it was okay, this is it. I think she's like, all right then.
Well, you're right. Together.
Yeah, you're right. We don't have any shelter. You know, not your fault. We're screwed. That's it. You know, guess we don't have to worry about the surgery after all.
It all worked out.
Yeah, we should have charged more on credit cards. So, again, not a happy ending to the movie. And I've...
Well, he wasn't crazy.
That's true. And I did a little bit of reading, because like I said, I couldn't find anybody else who had seen this movie. I wanted to talk... I mean, I knew I was going to talk to you about it, which I was happy about, but I wanted to get some sort of... Maybe I was just like... I didn't see whatever you saw in it, so maybe I just didn't look at it right. Now, God knows I'm not watching it again, so I wanted to get some other viewpoints. And I ended up on IMDb reading a bunch of comments about the end of the movie and what it meant. And people were angry. Like, angry at one another. One... I mean, people were, you know, a certain contingent was saying that, and I guess in the extra features, I didn't see the extra features, but I guess in the extra features, it, both Michael Shannon and the director, refused to talk about the end of the movie. It was just, it's up to the viewer to determine what was going on, which a lot of people on the IMDb forum thought was a bullshit director move. And a cop out on ending a movie.
I think that's the way it should be.
Well, I think so too. I mean, like I said, I didn't say this was an unsuccessful movie. I didn't say this was a bad movie. But yeah, I mean, either way, if he was crazy and now, I mean, I guess if you look at it analytically, if the daughter saw the storm coming, you know, there's no reason she should be going crazy too. So it's got to be real. However, there's no explanation for what the motor oil rain is or any of the thing. You know, I mean, is it just a natural phenomenon or is it the apocalypse?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not a meteorologist or a theologian, so I have no way to. I mean, I have a better idea what they were drilling for. So yeah. It's not going to be on my list of judgment.
Really? It might be on mine. I loved this movie. I mean, it wasn't pleasant to sit through, but I thought it was a fantastic movie. The performances across the board were great. And one thing we didn't talk about is the movie itself is beautiful. I mean, it's really well shot. There are a few special effects that I thought were very well done. I mean, it's obviously a movie with a modest budget. I think they got the most out of it. The imagery was really, really striking. They would usually cut from, you know, one of the terrifying dreams or visions to something really beautiful, just like leaves in a, you know, in the sunlight or something. And, even the storms, the clouds were just beautiful and menacing all at once.
Oh yeah, the lightning was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, so visually, it was a fantastic movie.
What did you think about the score?
It was very minimal.
Yeah, super minimal, which I thought was really effective.
Yeah, and it was most effective, I think, for what it didn't do. Like, it didn't have any musical cues that you could pick up on, like in the dream sequences. So there's nothing in the score that clued you in that, you know, it was a vision or a dream sequence. You only got to figure that out by context later on in the movie, or had to wait until the scene was over.
It was what the score for Eyes Wide Shut was trying to be. I don't know. Have you seen Eyes Wide Shut?
A long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, the score to Eyes Wide Shut is a tremendous piece of crap. It's like basically a guy sitting at the piano and like hitting one key over and over and over and over again.
I do remember it now.
Yeah, yeah. Tremendous piece of crap. But I was impressed with this score because, like I said, yeah, you're absolutely right. It didn't give you, there was no, nothing, the score didn't give away anything.
No.
But it added to the creepy tension of the whole thing.
All the way through the movie, to the very end.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't like the way this movie made me feel, but the fact that the movie made me feel anything is to its credit. I mean, it did a really good job.
It did. I mean, it certainly... like I said in the beginning, it brought up issues for me. I mean, I wonder how I would have reacted to it before I had kids. Because that was sort of the entry point for me into the tension that Curtis is feeling. Because that was the initial thing, was his daughter was in jeopardy in his visions. And that's what was really freaking him out. And causing him to start to make difficult choices to protect her and eventually the whole family as his understanding of the storm to come increased. But the way he reacted also, he did such a good job of communicating the weight of the tension and how it was affecting him without ever speaking. And it really reminded me of pretty much all of last year for me, when I was dealing with a pretty significant back issue. And it was really difficult. And I didn't even realize it at the time, but you know, just aside from the constant pain of the actual injury, but just the tension of not knowing what was going to happen. You know, I had some unpleasant choices to make about how to deal with it, which eventually ended it with a pretty significant surgery. But, you know, before that, there's always, I was under constant threat of, if it got slightly worse, I could suffer permanent nerve damage. And so that was always weighing on my mind. At the same time, I was wondering if something did happen, or if the surgery didn't work or went bad, how that would affect my ability to care for my family. And all of that was just, you know, really starting to just create this enormous pressure on me that I didn't even realize for a while. But I saw that in Curtis's character and in Michael Shannon's performance, and it was so effective that it really brought me back to that place in my life that I didn't necessarily want to think about. So I was really moved by his understated performance in this movie.
Oh, and you know, the things that I thought of that I alluded to earlier was that, and that I deal with a little bit at work, is that for people who are having hallucinations, even if they know that it's a hallucination, it's still a very real thing. So you still have to get through that period. And you're still moving forward. Even if you think that you were in the middle of this coming storm, you have to, you know, even if you know it's probably not the right, you know, that it's probably not real, it's very real to you. And even communicating with other people during that period of time, there's a simulation that I've been able to do that has, it's actually, there's a couple different ones, but, it's kind of this 3D sort of thing, but you have to kind of make your way through a just a transaction to go to get your medicine refilled at the pharmacy. And while you're doing this, you're hearing an approximation of what people who have auditory hallucinations have, things like, you know, repeating rhyming words, you know, kind of, you know, Tourette's like, I guess it's echolalia and stuff, and how difficult it is to hear voices or hear repeated words or, you know, conversation that isn't probably happening, but you don't know whether it's real or not. And just kind of going through all that noise to make the transaction you're trying to do, to get on the bus or to go and get your medicine refilled, especially if there's an issue with getting it refilled, you know, just cutting through all that noise just to maintain the, just to get your general needs met, is sometimes very difficult. And I thought he did a really good job kind of portraying that, as far as, you know, he wasn't minimizing what he was going through. They could, you know, a lesser performance would have had him just kind of trying to ignore all the stuff.
Right. And probably develop like lots of tics or something to demonstrate, you know, what he was experiencing and what he was trying to suppress. But no, I get what you're saying. It's, he did a really good job of portraying how hard it was to hold his shit together while he was outwardly holding his shit together.
What do you know about this director?
Nothing. That's, I did a very similar thing to you after, we watched the movie. I wanted more, and I needed to know more about it. So I don't typically do it, but yeah, I went to IMDb and looked up the director, looked at the trivia, for the movie, see if it could clue me in on anything. Yeah, and I saw that, it's the same director that did the Matthew McConaughey movie Mud, which I know was really, well reviewed, and it's on my list to see, but I haven't seen it. I don't think I've seen anything else that this director has done.
No, I definitely haven't. It just sort of came out of left field for me.
Yeah, but I want to. I mean, he's on my list now. I'm going to be watching out for him.
You know who's on my list? My dog is on my list. Or the passing car or whatever my dog is barking at. Anyway. Yeah, no, it's. I'd like to see what he does with a romantic comedy, maybe. But yeah, no, I mean.
Ambitious.
No, this was a horror movie straight out. I mean, this was just a horror movie.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm really surprised my wife wanted to watch it. With the arrival of children, she is no longer willing to tolerate horror movies. She just can't do it, especially since the only time we can typically watch movies together is right before we go to bed. So that's not just happening. But yeah, she was all over this movie. She wanted to see it. She really thought it was tremendous too. So I was kind of surprised about.
Can you Jeff imagine Nichols. Going and seeing this at a theater?
No. No.
Can you imagine?
I can't even imagine sitting through this whole movie at once.
Can you imagine taking a date to this movie?
No.
Or well, meeting people from work to go see this movie?
No. No. Yeah, this is a movie that I wanted to suck up a lot more information about after I watched it, but I didn't want to talk about it. So if I had just finished the movie today, I would not have wanted to record this podcast today.
Oh, no. I mean, I would have done a lot more whinging at you for making me watch it. But yeah, I mean, this is, again, I kind of think I was at a fairly dark place anyway. And I was kind of watching the movie in between frustrating moments of parenting. And yeah, it was just dark. No, this movie, it could be described as evocative.
Sure.
Yeah, even if it evokes is all your insecurities about being a father or a husband or a person. Or a person of sanity.
Yeah, no matter where you're at with your life, this movie will make you question whether or not you can take care of your family.
Yeah, it's not a single person's movie, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I can see where I'm not going to go watch this and Trees Lounge or Ghost World or some of those other kind of. So, any other thoughts on Take Shelter?
No, I thought it was great. I would recommend anybody see it. Just be careful.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. I mean, after you've already listened to this, yeah, it's. But I guess even knowing kind of what's coming, well, I don't know. It's hard to describe how much tension is created in this movie.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah, it's just.
So I forgot. So the second release of Tension was coming out of The Shelter, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
you're
I
like,
suppose.
Oh, that's, all right. They're not going to die a horrible apocalyptic death. And then the final release of Tension is at the very end when he finds out he's not crazy.
Well, there you go. See, you're a glass half full kind of guy.
Three releases of Tension for you.
God. Well, I once took a class. It was partially dealing with suicidal people and partially compassion fatigue for people that are dealing with, you know, people in crisis. After a while, you can grow, you can get compassion fatigue. And that's not a good thing to have. You know, if your reaction, if somebody is crying for help and your job is to help them in an emergency, fuck 'em is probably not the good attitude to take with you on a daily basis to work. But the solution to this problem, as presented to us, was to relax your pelvic floor.
That sounds unpleasant.
Yeah, yeah. It was bizarre.
So relax your pelvic floor is essentially saying loosen your sphincter, right?
I think it's slightly different, but it seems like one could lead to the other, which would have embarrassing consequences. Although you wouldn't be all upset about what the emergency going on if you just crapped yourself.
I guess not.
Yeah. Hey, it could be worse, dude. I just crapped myself. Settle down now.
Look, empathy right there.
Yeah, there you go. And now I have compassion for people with problems because I just crapped myself. I can't. I guess my pride is gone. I don't feel better than any of my customers or clients or whatever you call them.
I think I might suffer from compassion fatigue. This is my normal daily baseline.
You have to have compassion to have it to get fatigued, right? Compassion is a muscle. You have to flex it.
That also sounds unpleasant.
Yeah, I'm full of crap. I have no idea what I'm talking about. So, next on our list of movies, if I consult my calendar correctly, is Color of Money.
Yes, I was very surprised that you and Jason got through your Kingpin discussion without talking about The Hustler or The Color of Money.
Yeah, it never even occurred to me, although it makes complete sense now that you point it out.
Yeah, I think you will find specific scenes that are directly parodied in Kingpin to great effect.
Excellent. Well, I remember enjoying the movie back in the day.
Have you seen The Hustler, too?
Yeah, I think I may have seen it with you at some point on video.
Yeah, that sounds right.
You were going through a particular pool or billiards, nine ball, I think, phase. And we may have watched a bunch of movies.
Right, yeah. I think I started with nine ball after The Hustler. That's what he was playing right before he got his thumbs broken.
Okay, well, spoiler.
Yeah, well, instead of thumbs are broken, instead of shoved into a ball return.
Well, yeah. 6-1.
But essentially the same scene.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait. I'll see if a young Tom Cruise and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, it'll bring us back to a time and place. So, any other thoughts? I'm dying to hear what your walkout line on this movie is.
It won't play over the podcast because it's actually a sign. I'm making it right now. It's the sign for Storm.
Ah, very nice. I like that.
I'm going to put it to use in my everyday life.
Excellent. That's, I'm just trying, if I could pull off a deaf person speaking really horrible, rude impression, this is where I would lay it down. But since I'm not capable of it, and it's actually maybe
that sounds like a really bad idea anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's the only joke tonight that I think is actually beneath even me, so I'm not going to do that. Anyway, so Color of Money next week. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.